In this most dangerous galaxy of ours, doom may come from countless corners, seeking our human end by bolt or blade or claw or maw. It is our fate, this endless war we are forever trapped in, a terminal decline where we must face and fight the end of all things every day. In many cases, we are granted all too much awareness of such calamities as they bear down upon us, howling their coming to the stars that the gods themselves may watch the coming wars with gluttonous glee. Yet others are quite the opposite. Patient are they, a lingering terrible presence, content to bide time and seize upon the opportunity to bring ruin at the hour of their choosing. Our tragically human conception of the passage of time is so inconsequential to these minds as to verge into hilarity. To them, we are pests. No, we are bacteria. An infestation so beneath contempt as to barely factor within calculations. The tale of this chronicle is of one such war. A conflict fought against an end inevitable. Battles whose outcomes were decided millennia before they had even been fought. Know then that this is a record of the fall of Orpheus. The Orpheus sector, located in the veiled region of Segmentum Tempestus, on the very borders of Imperial space, is believed to have been settled first by humanity in the Dark Age of Technology. The little evidence we have of this comes from Great Crusade-era Imperial exploratory expeditions that first brought the Emperor's banner to the local volume, most notably those of rogue trader Lady Arcia Orpheus. The Lady Orpheus was the first Imperial expedition into the Mandragoran stars of the Segmentum, intended to be a pathfinder for the true expedition fleets of the Astartes legions and the Imperial army. She discovered remnant human planets, much reduced in power and sophistication, dwelling within an uneasy parity with several Xenos species, although which ones we have no record, as they were laterally annihilated by the advancing Great Crusade. Notably, the systems catalogued were marked by the extreme age of their planets, the majority of whom were long since incapable of sustaining life. Such was the apparent age of these worlds, it was difficult to establish if their barren nature had always been the case, or if they had been subjected to some celestial calamity in the far distant past. Curiously, the furthest flung of these planets, the ones closest to the galactic rim, apparently bore remnant ruins of a pre-human civilization. Although it appears Lady Orpheus did not examine or record those in detail, beyond noting their deeply sinister character. Although marked for further exploration, the Veiled Region did not see colonization during the outward rushes of those late Crusade years, as the advent of the Great Heresy put paid to hopes of expansion and prosperity. Instead, the region, owing to its remoteness and navigable difficulty, became a haven for refugees, corsairs, brigands, and all manner of galactic flotsam, dwelling under neither the banner of Terra nor the Warmaster. The Veiled Region became a battleground during the Scouring, as fleeing elements of the Alpha Legion, under the leadership of Warlord Dynat Mal, claimed the volume for themselves, harrowing all Imperial forces sent to exterminate them. The last Imperial outpost in the region, a garrison station at Amara, was destroyed by the Alpha Legion during the campaign, ending what little presence the Empire yet possessed there. It became known as the Dark Marches, passing from Imperial concern for nearly a millennium. It was not until M32 that an incursion by the Adeptus Astartes Raven Guard chapter marked the first attempts by Terra to pursue the enemies within the region. While expecting to assess traitor strength, the Raven Guard instead found a grave. The remains of the Alpha Legion strike cruiser Occam's Razor had been grounded on the jungle world of Apollyon, surrounded by skeletal remains of 20th Legion Astartes, alongside, curiously, relics and war gear from the Iron Hands and White Scars legions, as well as remains of mutant humans, Eldari, Krave, and other unidentified Xenos species. With no evidence forthcoming as to quite how this charnel house had been affected, and with their vengeance denied, the Raven Guard departed to make their reports to Terra. The Dark Marches went relatively untouched for several more millennia, with the Imperium focusing efforts on the pacification and settlements of volumes closer to major population centers and possessing less dreadful reputations. This would change when, in 610 M36, Segmentum Tempestus was at the height of a renaissance in power Imperial chroniclers have termed the Rising Storm. Loyalist fervor, burgeoning in the aftermath of the Age of Apostasy, was at its apex, and with the Segmentum relatively unscathed by the conflicts that had marked that epoch, Imperial authorities launched numerous crusades to expand the Emperor's realm, make safe its borders, and bring its light to the darkest reaches of that region of the galaxy. The Dark Marches Crusade was an especial success, and indeed was led by Lord Tempestus Hal Orpheus, a lineal descendant of the rogue trader who had initially explored the region. Over the course of 150 years, the Crusade claimed nearly 600 worlds for the Imperium, eventually being declared a triumphant success and seeing the birth of four new Imperial sectors: Haxan, Layak, Eurydice, and Orpheus. The capital of the latter was Amara, the site of the previous Imperial garrison destroyed by the Alpha Legion, sitting, as it did, on the nexus of several stable warp corridors. The worlds of Arcantis, Gedrid, and Midwinter were granted as prizes to the Astra Militarum regiments of the Crusade that had distinguished themselves most highly, while the dead worlds of the Meyer system, rich in mineral wealth, were granted to the Adeptus Mechanicus as their sovereign territory. Initial colonization efforts were deemed too slow, forcing the Administratum to redirect refugee flows from a dozen nearby war zones towards the Orpheus sector. Such an act is far from uncommon within the Imperium, and was further supplemented by an additional invocation of the Edict of Transmission, an Administratum Act allowing worlds whose populations are in terminal decline to be forcibly relocated, their homes abandoned by the Imperium, that their human stock be preserved elsewhere. In practice, these efforts consigned many millions of human subjects to a dangerous journey into a relatively unknown frontier, resulting in the deaths of millions of souls aboard vessels lost in transit and on failed colony drives. In 976 M37, after a millennium of relatively comfortable frontier prosperity, all contact is lost with the Layak sector. While itself not especially uncommon upon the Imperium's borders, what with tempestuous warp storms of the Galactic Rim, the incident is marked by an unusual amount of obfuscation on behalf of the Ordo Xenos of the Inquisition, whose Segmentum conclaves seal all records of the occurrence, while simultaneously ordering Segmentum authorities to massively increase the military tithes on the Orpheus sector itself. The near-crippling economic impact of mass conscription, significant expansion of the sector's battle fleet, and construction of orbital defenses around key worlds halts all Rimward colonial efforts almost overnight, further stymied by an inquisitorial ban on further exploration of those most remote volumes. A millennium of ceaseless military expansion, followed by consistent refugee and pilgrim population influxes, created conditions of significant unrest within the sector, forcing the first of numerous purgation crackdowns to root out social malcontents. The situation was primed for the disaster that was to follow, when heretic followers of the Fort Saint von Malice caused mass uprisings on the world of Epirus and Kalskath, rendering both into wastelands and draining sector resources in the process. Epirus itself was a massive loss, as one of the sector's key agri-worlds. Famine would persistently stalk the Orpheus sector for centuries to come, ultimately contributing to the rise of the cult Celestarii amongst the nobility and bourgeois of the sector, those who had suffered the greatest economic losses from the previous 1,000 years of tithe and destabilization. The cult's resources and connections would make them an almost impossible presence to fully stamp out, despite the best efforts of the Ordo Hereticus and the Adeptus Arbites. Despite the forever persistent machinations of the archenemy, this particular sect was not dedicated to the worship of the ruinous powers. Rather, the Celestarii worshipped an ancient race of powerful beings that cult dogma said were slumbering within the hidden reaches of the galaxy. Beings whose day of awakening would bring bloody ruin for their enemies and eternal life for their supplicants. Ordo Hereticus records, one has been permitted access to, state that religious ceremonies were held by the cults around recovered xeno-archaeological artifacts of unknown provenance, rites that were often cannibalistic in nature. The tensions within the sector came to a bloody apogee between 860 and 903 M39, when disaffected nobles, chartists, and officiants began a series of bloody vendettas that dragged the sector into internecine bedlam. The House of Orpheus had, decades prior, been replaced in its gubernatorial role by the House of Lan, a decadent aristocratic lineage renowned for their profligacy, whose corrupt skimming of what little fat remained in the economically strained volume was the final straw for many under their nominal charge. Tithe tensions and constant Xenos raids pushed the moneyed class of Orpheus into a campaign of assassinations, sabotage, and piracy, a tangled web that inevitably led to a full-on civil war when the honor clans of the Drusillan cluster seceded from the Orpheus sector, providing a rallying point for several other renegade factions and fundamentally undermining the sector's stability. Desperate to make an impact on the ongoing power plays, the governing parliament of Amraphel resorted to employing Xenos mercenaries, deploying the vile Crave against their rivals. Inevitably, into this conflict stalked the depredations of the archenemy, as, bleeding over from the nearby Haxan sector's conflicts, chaos-aligned groups provoked uprisings on Celicar and Apollyon, with demonic emanations breaching the warp on both planets and all Imperial control breaking down as hell stalked the populations. Orpheus's deliverance was wrought from an entirely unexpected quarter. Above the skies of Amara arrived a ramshackle crusade force made of a disparate collection of Astra Militarum elements, ragtag militias, and threadbare pilgrims. But zealots all, aflame with the glory of the Emperor and driven by an arch-confessor of the Ecclesiarchy named Marduk of Helvamon. Driven by ecstatic visions he claimed were granted to him by the Emperor, Marduk sought to stymie the doom of the sector, a great calamity he claimed would rise, quote, from where the light of Orpheus falls forever into shadow. Regardless of his motivation, the Confessor's arrival, alongside his more than 100,000 fanatics, was a pivotal moment in the sector's history. The ensuing War of Faith pitched the crusade against the archenemy forces, which were revealed to have the support from heretic Astartes of the Alpha Legion, Night Lords, and Deathmongers. Accordingly, the Angel's Revenant chapter of the Adeptus Astartes, alongside the Order of the Valorous Heart of the Adepta Sororitas, responded hastily to the petitions of aid from the Arch-Confessor, supplemented by a task force from the Segmentum's Ordo Malleus Inquisitorial Conclave. This escalated conflict ultimately lasted 2 decades, and put to death a full 20% of the sector's population in its calamity. The climactic battle over the world of Kalskath remained for a millennia a curious and enduring mystery, until later events brought revelation to its sorry tale. The planet, heavily fortified by the warped smiths of the Deathmonger heretic Astartes, was besieged by Marduk himself, with the full might of the surviving baseline human crusaders. Rather than involving his Astartes and Sororitas allies, Marduk decreed the Emperor had wished for the common soldiery to claim the world in his name. Indeed, the Archconfessor was initially quite successful. His final communiques to nearby Imperial forces were full of his customary fiery vigor, stating that the faithful had broken the orbital cordon and forced multiple landing zones into heretic territory. Only, suddenly, for astropathic communication to cease, save for a garbled message of pure alarm. An intervening Angel's Revenant strike cruiser, rushing to the aid of the Crusade and believing a hitherto unknown heretic force had suddenly joined the battle, was ambushed as soon as it translated in system by two small but extraordinarily powerful void ships. They resembled no vessel on record that the chapter had ever encountered, and the exotic weapons deployed likewise had no precedent in Astartes' combat doctrine. The strike cruiser was ultimately victorious, but horrifically mauled, managing to destroy one of the ambushing vessels before the other retreated. Sensorium suites recorded distinct energy discharge patterns, similar to those of the ambusher's weaponry, being unleashed further in system, corresponding readings speaking to a massive fleet engagement taking place. Given the Astartes' vessel's condition, it could do little but limp in system, arriving far too late to intervene in whatever battle had taken place. The mysterious attackers had departed. What they left behind was a graveyard, burning hulks of Imperial ships drifting in orbit, sundered by devastating weaponry. Survivors yet lived amongst the debris field, but below, the planet was a howling storm of radioactive ash and unearthly fire, seemingly all trace of Imperial and arch-enemy forces utterly obliterated. The world was renamed post-mortem as St. Marduk's Bane, lost forever to grand environmental collapse, but now bearing the name of the lost, martyred, and canonized Archconfessor. The Crusade concluded on a grim note, and of the mysterious attackers, no trace was ever found. The rebuilding of the Orpheus sector involved centuries of consolidation and repopulation efforts. The forces of the War of Faith were instrumental in the early aspects of the latter, laying down arms in exchange for plots of land on war-ravaged worlds, with the Inquisition maintaining a significant roving presence in the sector to root out surviving heretic cells and purge suspected populations of possible taint. Apollyon, as the center of many of the warp breaches and incursions, was granted to the Holy Ordos in perpetuity, becoming an inquisitorial fortress world, while the small colony of Libethra was recast as a shrine world in the honor of Saint Marduk, a cemetery for the millions of war dead, and a fortress monastery for the Angel's Revenant, who, prior to the Orphean War of Faith, had been an entirely fleet-based chapter. The Imperial efforts and the lingering zeal of this crusade allowed the sector to prosper and flourish once more, despite the omnipresent threat of Xenos incursions from beyond the Imperium's borders. An orc invasion, for example, was thoroughly crushed by Orphean regiments in 319 M40, but while the resurgent sector established itself in admirable time, the first half of M41 was marked by a reversal of those fortunes. The Decapolis conspiracy weakened the sector's centralized regime on Amara, while the centuries-long etheric disturbances dubbed the Storm Tide saw the Inquisition conduct dozens of pogroms to root out unsanctioned psykers. In 744 M41, a curious string of murders scythed through the Kellerman Scholem, seemingly targeting academics sanctioned to study xeno-archaeological artifacts common across the sector, and, it was suspected, financially supported in doing so by the cult Celestarii. Witnesses to these murders, half mad with distress, reported a figure walking through flames, emerging from thin air only to butcher their colleagues, taking the artifacts with them as they vanished. In the waning years of M41, portents of doom, spread by mendicant preachers, became stock in trade for the major worlds of the Orpheus sector. They were not without reason. The etheric disruption of centuries past had still yet to fully expire. Ships were being lost at a far higher rate than usual, consumed, it was generally believed, by warp storms. One such storm had swallowed whole the penal colony of Moros Lacrimal, rendering the fates of its 13 million prisoners, as well as several penitentiary hulks, utterly unknown. In 811 M41, a mortally damaged void Dromon, belonging to the flotilla of rogue trader Caleb Gilderoy, approached the Adeptus Mechanicus garrison at Harrow Watch. Transmissions received from the vessel indicated the crew were in distress bordering on lunacy, raving about a terror, quote, from beyond the stars, that had slaughtered their fellow craft within the expedition. Begging for sanctuary, but receiving no permission to enter Sovereign Mechanicus territory, the Dromon was destroyed as it refused to turn back from the defense perimeter. Matters came to a sudden head in 990 M41, when, after centuries of immaterial disturbances, the warp squalls within the sector came to an immediate end, seemingly as if some massive etheric shockwave had blown them away. Unfortunately, such an ending was no time for rejoicing. The resulting bow wave of psychic pressure caused a major loss of life amongst astropaths sector-wide, severely hampering interstellar communication. Mass hysteria, dreadful night terrors, inexplicable murders, and a whole host of violent delusions and criminality stalked the populations of the Orphean worlds, leading the Inquisition to presume that a major demonic incursion was imminent and to begin preparations for just such an occurrence. With Imperial attention focused upon the immaterial, next to no one noticed an Adeptus Mechanicus report that, within the depths of the forbidden Caracol system, a binary star pair had gone supernova, simultaneously. Such a stellar phenomenon is unlikely to the point of nigh numerical impossibility, but what was more curious still was its timing. The event had seemingly occurred, when chronologues adjusted for relative time, at the same instant the warp storms bedeviling the sector had blown out. Such evidence was, unfortunately, only discovered in the aftermath of what was to come. At the time of the twin supernovae, the Harrow's Watch defense station merely logged the incident for later perusal by Mechanica Stellar Cartographicae, and for forwarding on to the relevant authorities within the Imperium. It was, however, noticed by the Magisters within the cult Celestarii. The group's writings spoke of just such an event as a harbinger of the time for their mysterious masters, an era of change, destruction, and rebirth. Many Magisters and their acolytes, seeded through the wealthy and powerful within the sector, began to draw their plans for the upcoming time of revelation, while Imperial authorities were focusing their attention on the supposed coming demonic incursion. The signs were there, writ upon the firmament itself, yes, but also buried within the 10,000-year history of the Orpheus sector. None could see them. So scattered were they, and so hopelessly ignorant of the horror that lurked beyond was the Imperium that what was to come was effectively preordained. Had any the ken to connect these scraps of history, or the curiosity or will to follow the trails of these scraps, it is possible that billions of human lives may have been saved. Alas, that was never to be the case. When the attack came, it was not upon one world, nor even one system, nor even several systems. Scores of Imperial worlds came under sudden, unprecedented, and overwhelming assaults from quarters unforeseen. The invasion was so coordinated and so total that beyond its front line lay only the deathly silence of worlds that had already fallen to total annihilation. Death came to Imperial outposts so fast that many had not even the chance to scream into the void. No astropathic cries were hurled into the restive immaterium. Such was the destruction first that befell the Rimward stars under the Emperor's light, that even in the aftermath of their doom, it is impossible to establish the timing with which they fell. They simply vanished, lost in an instant to the Imperium, as if a pall of purest darkness had been drawn in a massive line across the whole sector. Of the worlds of Catrus, Boros Landing, Palisite, Aerith, Epirus, we know nothing beyond the fact that the enemy came and won, and did so with an almost impossible speed. One of the fewest scraps of information that did survive was in a salvation pod of the Adeptus Mechanicus deep-range infiltrator unit Cobol Sigma, assigned to the defense station of Harrow's Watch. It merely speaks of a curious violence amongst its crew, rising instances of technological malfunction, and ultimately, a disaster heralded by wicked sickle ships dancing like carrion crows through seething plasma fires. It was the Inquisitorial Fortress of Apollyon that was first able to raise the alarm, when a badly damaged Ordo cutter vessel was able to translate in-system at Amara, bearing an urgent report of the sudden loss of scores of Imperial-held systems. That this vessel had managed to overcome and escape these invaders beggars belief. But with this missive, the disbelief of such a doom could be overcome by the unquestionable seal of the Ordo Malleus upon it, and by the Inquisition's urgings that the Sector battle fleet beat to quarters and Amara raise its defense regiments and prime orbital batteries for invasion. Astra Militarum forces, mustering for the assault on the Kemarian system, were hurriedly retasked to Sector defense, while messenger vessels bearing orders were dispatched to Corward systems, benighted as they were by the loss of astropathic life with the cessation of the warp storms. Only as these communiques were attempted by authorities on Amara was the true scale of the invasion starting to unfold, and the measure of Imperial losses that already, impossibly, been incurred. The true nature of the invaders was yet utterly unknown. There was no after-action reports. There were no Pict or Vid logs. There were no Auspex screeds, because the invaders had left no survivors. Messages sent to the Rimward worlds were unanswered. Any vessel that attempted to pass the line of darkness that stretched across the sector from Tlaloc to Epirus vanished, presumably with all hands. Most disturbing of all was the silence of the shrine world of Lebethra, fortress monastery of the Angel's Revenant, for centuries the sector's boldest defenders. For an Astartes monastery to be struck with so total an apparent loss was a portent beyond dire. What enemy could manage such a thing? It is perhaps to the credit of the Orphean Imperial commanders that such panic as this information no doubt instilled was channeled into rapid organization of planetary defense systems, rather than some rash muster and charge forward into enemy territory out of blind, vengeful belligerence. As part of these preparations, Imperial and Mechanicus assayers bent every Auspex grid, etheric scryer, and even optical scope towards attempting to glean information about the worlds lost thus far to the mysterious invaders. And these efforts came to naught. With little options, Sector Command dispatched military reinforcements to the world of Drusilla Majoris and Midwinter, prosperous and heavily populated planets that had up to now been core worlds of the Sector, yet now became frontier worlds against the advancing Dead Zone. Amara, directly threatened in kind, pulled in armies and warships desperately from the coreward volumes of the Sector. The Governor, Calibron Lan, progressively stripped away shielding forces from other coreward worlds to booster Amara's own defenses, pulling warships and commerce vessels into a centralized fleet at the Battle Fleet Orpheus Anchorage in the capital system. Elsewhere, Imperial forces waited for the hammer to fall. They waited for their skies to darken with the ships of the unseen invaders. The panic that followed the initial alarm changed within days to a cooler but omnipresent tension, a taut anxiety that only grew more so as the days stretched into weeks and then months. There was nothing but silence from the impenetrable front of darkness. No enemy ships were sighted. No word emerged from the gulf that remained with lost worlds held within its grip. Governor Lahn was placed under mounting pressure to do something, anything, than merely wait in grim anticipation for the next blow to fall. Petitions from the nobility, Chartist captains, the Militarum, and the Navy daily assailed his offices, containing plans for everything from a naval expedition in force to a full-scale popular counter-crusade in the style of the ancient War of Faith. Several suggested an immediate counterstrike at the world of Lebethra, for surely the Angel's Revenant were not lost. They were merely besieged by invaders, and desperately in need of reinforcements. Governor Lahn rejected all in kind, fearing that to grant even a modicum of support or hearing to any of these plans would give ground he could ill afford, and was, to his significant relief, backed up in this by the grim presence of Inquisitor Lord Hiram Nitschona of the Ordo Malleus. Nitschona was the only ranking member of his Ordo currently at large in the Orpheus sector, and one of the surviving Chamber Apollyon, the inquisitorial conclave, and thus a significant political power. Nitschona was ironclad in his belief that the calamity was malefic in nature. It was surely the work of the ruinous powers, for what else could so becalm the warp, corrupt the mind, and seize so large a volume of space completely and utterly? He counseled patience. Aid was being summoned from the Imperium, and it was vital the Sector Command make no attempt to enter the darkness until it had arrived. On 38-06-991-M41, everything changed. Whereas before there had been naught but cryptic silence, there was suddenly an assault of signals, a data storm flaring across superluminal auguries, blinding Imperial watchposts in a torrent of information. Astropaths reeled against the discordance of distress calls and echoing psychic aftershocks of their dying and dead kin, distorted into near incomprehensibility and folded in overlapping chronometric markers. It was as if the tormented cries of all of these doomed souls had been frozen perfectly in time, only to be unleashed in a single instant. Riding on this immaterial bowel wave were other, far stranger signals. Blazing pillars of energy, spiking into the warp on the edge of the veiled region, unlike anything the Imperium had ever encountered. These pulsing fonts of unknowable power spilled off howling gales of radiation and charged particle storms that seemed free to transcend the gulfs of distance between stars in mere moments, defying the physical laws of this terraqueous reality. The storms of energy danced like static discharge along warp routes. Ship crews observed the phenomenon clinging like ghostly fire to the hulls of their vessels. A vile electromagnetic contagion spread with it, invading vox channels, destroying the djinn wards of supposedly sealed and secure communication webs, fading echoes of agonized screams emerging from speakers. The voices it carried whispered in an unknowable eldritch tongue, sounds that were wholly inhuman, born in a language that rocked the foundations of sanity. Yet within this binaric blasphemy, this aural atrocity, there was contained one phrase in Imperial Gothic, repeated again and again, a declaration and a promise of doom beyond inevitable. Maenarch comes. Ave Imperator. Gloria in excelsis terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @oculusimperia. Otherwise, Please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.